Ali Alawi says, you can't reclaim Islam unless you first admit that Islam today is in crisis. Alawi served as Minister of Defense and Minister of Finance in the Iraqi post-war governments. Now he's a visiting fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Ali Alawi's most recent book is called The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. Steve Paulson spoke with Ali Alawi about the genesis of this crisis.
In the preface to your book, you begin by talking about how secular Iraq was when you were growing up, which will surprise a lot of our listeners. Can you talk about the role that religion played in most people's lives back then?
Well, I think if you look at the sort of the elites, the middle and upper middle classes, the tone of the country was overwhelmingly secular, not necessarily liberal, but certainly not one that was infused with Islam in terms of its, you know, public manifestation. So in the 1950s, I mean, it was very, very unlikely that you would come across any observant Muslim, as it were, in the ruling groups or in the leading commercial, intellectual, or, you know, cultural elites.
So there wasn't daily prayer, there wasn't fasting during Ramadan?
But it wasn't to the same extent visible as it was now. I mean, Islam was clearly in retreat. It was seen to be a traditional perspective on life, which had lost its relevance, especially when it came to ordering the outside world in terms of government, in terms of social and economic progress. And the language of the times were entirely secular. Islam did not really feature in countries' self-definition, as it were.
We've been talking about Iraq. Was this secular attitude true for most Arab and Islamic countries back in the 1950s?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I traveled in a number of countries as a young person, but if you read the memoirs of the times, the same thing was apparent everywhere, from Casablanca in the extreme west right to Indonesia in the extreme eastern part of the Islamic world. Secularism was everywhere. The countries were governed by various versions of European socialist philosophies, militarism, nationalism. And you had a few traditional monarchies, like in Saudi Arabia, which did have an Islamic rooting, but they were seen to be marginal to the Islamic world. And the prevailing spirit, as it were, was a spirit of secularism and modernization.
Well, clearly, the religious landscape is very different today. What happened?
Well, what happened was that what people thought of as a dormant or a civilization or a perspective in retreat had not yet quite disappeared from people's consciousness. And it is really symptomatic of the way in which Islam had been mistreated or treated in the past 150 years. It went through a number of cycles in terms of how people tried to reconcile modernity with Islam and reconcile the retreat of Islamic civilization in the face of the manifestly superior technological and military prowess of the West. Islam never featured seriously in any of the reform projects that governed the Middle East and the broader Islamic world from World War II until the 1970s. But it did not really disappear from people's consciousness. But it took a jolt to make people aware of its significance. And that jolt in the Arab world was the 1967 war, which not only led to the quick defeat of the combined Arab armies by Israel, a much smaller country, but also exposed the weaknesses of the various ideologies and programs for reform and renewal that had governed the Arab world. And, you know, pretty soon other parts of the Muslim world, Pakistan, for example, came under a similar set of impulses that began to think of Islam as the way out of the dilemma that Muslims faced of disempowerment and underdevelopment.
Now, most people would say that the Islamic world today is suffering all kinds of problems, and I think people within the Islamic world would tend to agree with that. But you say political Islam is a manifestation of the ailment rather than the ailment itself. Can you explain what you mean?
Well, most Muslims, when they talk about Islamic civilization, they go back to sort of in their minds, in some cases it's an invented image of this golden age where the outer aspects of Islam appeared to prevail in the world, from governance to economic transactions to Islamic science to medicine to architecture. The entire world of Muslims was defined by what were seen to be the main precepts of Islam. But the civilization has many aspects to it, and it's not just the political aspects that were important. But these were the ones that were seen to open up the pathway, as it were, for Islam to regain its vitality. That is, if you organize your political life along the ideology of Islam and create institutions that reflect that, the civilization of Islam will, by that very act, be revitalized. But in reality, the other aspects of civilization, especially the material aspects, the cultural aspects, had been in retreat for a long time, and political Islam has nothing to say about that. It does not necessarily lead to the revitalization of those forces that can provide Muslims with an alternative to the technological, globalized, postmodern order. So narrowing it down to that aspect of it, although superficially it may lead one to believe that, well, Islam is back in power now that we have Islamist parties in charge, in reality, it's nothing of the sort, because Islamists, as much as anybody else, have been basically taken in or have assumed the goals and objectives of modernity and postmodernity, that is, development seen in the Western sense, social and economic improvement, military prowess, technological prowess. But the sources of that are all outside of Islam. They're in a different civilization, as it were. So in some ways, the success of political Islam has diminished the possibility of revitalizing Islam by ignoring the forces that lead to creativity in areas like science, technology, medicine, literature, art and architecture, and so on.
Hmm. Now, one thing I've often heard is that the Muslim world has lagged behind the West because it never had a Reformation. Unlike the Protestant Reformation, which broke the grip of the Catholic Church on Europe and helped to usher in, to some degree, the scientific revolution, that never happened in the Islamic world. And that's the reason that the Muslim world has lagged so far behind, especially in the worlds of science and technology. What do you make of that critique?
I think it's too easy to make a comparison between the experience of the West in terms of the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation, and then the Enlightenment. First of all, Islam does not really have a hierarchical church which you can then, or you'd want to reform or change. There's a hierarchy of sorts in the Shia world, which is a minority of the Muslim world, not more than 15 or 20%. But the hierarchy itself is not as strict or ordered as a church-like hierarchy would indicate. So what do you actually reform? What is it that you're trying to reform? As I said, there's no institutional basis for that reform. So the patterns of the Reformation do not really hold, I think, as being sort of a valid pathway for Islam, as well as, you know, the Enlightenment as a kind of division of the public space from sacred life, as it were. But at the same time, the other aspect of it is that people have tried to reform Islam. What that really means is that you want to reform the Sharia or the sacred law to bring its conclusions to whatever are the norms of modern or contemporary society. That's a very dangerous path to take, because reform in Islam doesn't necessarily lead to the kind of liberal humanist outcome that most people expect from reform. It can very easily lead to its opposite. It has done so. It can lead to, in fact, a narrowing of the perspectives or the closing of the Muslim mind in the name of reform going back to a kind of golden age. That is the sort of the Wahhabi system. And the Wahhabi system started as, in fact, a Puritan reaction or Puritan-like reaction to what was seen to be deviations in Muslim life. So it was a reform movement. But the consequences of it led somewhere else. And you can easily, in fact, connect, for example, the Taliban or Al-Qaeda to the so-called reform movements of the 19th and 20th century. So you should be careful for what you wish for.
Well, let me ask you to look into your crystal ball for a moment. Do you think we will ever see a revitalized Islamic civilization that takes its place alongside the other great civilizations of the world, one that is both religious but also coexists with the modern secular world?
Unless people rediscover the ethical principles that govern their inner and outer lives, I think that Islam may retreat into a private faith, a very important private faith, and it will still be the living faith of 1.5 billion people. But it will not be able to produce an alternative in civilizational terms to the postmodern globalized order. Whether this is good or bad is something you have to decide, or Muslims have to decide for themselves. But it's very difficult to see that happening. And wherever Muslims have had constraints removed from them, say financial constraints, or as say in the oil-rich Gulf countries, what they've produced are really, in my mind, caricatures of Western post-modernity, both in terms of their buildings, both in terms of their excesses, and so on. So without that, I think, you know, it seems that those who suddenly become wealthy, their idea of sort of a civilized life is sort of Las Vegas without alcohol. But most people would prefer the original, I think.
Ali Alawi is the author of The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. He served as Minister of Defense and Minister of Finance in the Iraqi post-war governments. Steve Paulson spoke with him.